This week, sunrise will be at 7:45, sunset at 5 to 6. Temperatures will reach around 13 degrees centigrade.
Welcome to the Sunwell News for the local blind and visually impaired community. Taken from the papers and other sources, this latest edition due with you on Saturday, October the 18th.
Some highlights from the Express and Star. Wednesday the 8th of October. Inquiry launched after body found in canal. Portet of Bearwood, a bustling town at the posh end of Smethwick. Charges for theft as part of crackdown. Two letters to the paper about Palestine action. Thursday's news. Armed gang forces school to go into lockdown. Importance of lung cancer screening program to catch cancer early. Three held over canal death probe. Friday's news. How to embrace aging. Midland Metropolitan Hospital celebrates its first birthday. Region pulled in record tourists and £14 billion for visitor economy. Saturday's news. West Brom fan died of natural causes, coroner says. Aldi rolling out price reduction zones. Tram line opening delayed until next year. Monday's news. Battery storage site appeal rejected. Comment column. Public notices. How public licensing and planning decisions look set to bypass objections. Tuesday's news. Albion memories helping to light up the lives of those with dementia. Fly the flag for the Black Country. Hygiene scores for Sandwell restaurants.
All those stories, of course, coming up courtesy of Express and Star Publications. And along the way, with the usual listing, courtesy of Talking News Federation of the TV and radio listings for the week ahead. And a couple of items very much to do with guide dogs. And one certainly has got to do directly with guide dog training. And one thing I forgot to mention last week was that we now have a podcast. There isn't too much I have to say about that, but I will say a little bit about how you get that if you're able to get podcasts on your phone or specialist player towards the end of this edition. We have a little news from Sandwell Council, who are setting their budget later this year. So, straight on then to the latest news from the papers. The first article, as you'll hear, being read by Mia.
Hello everyone, my name's Mia. I hope you're all well and enjoying the autumn season. If anyone's celebrating Halloween or not celebrating Halloween, I hope you have a lovely time. The countdown to Christmas is slowly upon us, so I'm choosing to favour that more so than Halloween. But I hope everyone's well regardless. Today I'm going to be reading some newspaper articles from the Express and Star, Wednesday the 8th of October. Inquiry launched as body found in water. A body has been discovered in water in West Bromwich, police have confirmed. West Midlands Police said the discovery was made near to Riders Green Road just before 11 a.m. yesterday. The death is being treated as unexplained, with a forensic post-mortem due to be carried out in the near future. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "A body was discovered in water near Riders Green Road, West Bromwich, just before 11 a.m. At this stage, the death is being treated as unexplained. A forensic post-mortem will be carried out in due course to help establish the cause of death." Bustling town has real community feel and a definite identity of its own. It's an area within easy reach of the Black Country and stands to one side of the busy Hagley Road. But Bearwood very much has its own identity and attracts people to live there due to housing, rents and a reasonable cost of living compared to its big neighbour in Birmingham. It's also an historic area with landmarks such as Thimble Mill Baths, although now demolished to make way for Sandwell Aquatic Centre, Lightwoods Park and Wiley Woods Golf Course, as well as St Mary's Church, which dates back over 130 years. We met and spoke with diners in a pub, and also spoke to people on the high street, named Bearwood Road, which is dominated partly by an Aldi store and features stores ranging from food to furniture and electrical goods. Melvin Haynes said he had lived in Bearwood all his life and very rarely went into Birmingham, though the transport network serving the area means it is easily accessible, as is Wolverhampton and smaller towns such as Howes Owen, Stourbridge and Cradley Heath. He said, "I find Bearwood very compact, centred around, but not exclusively, so around Bearwood Road, where you can find takeaways, pubs and restaurants, shops and supermarkets, all within 5 minutes of each other. There are roads off here as well, with businesses such as dentists, a grocery store and a bike shop. It is generally a good place to explore and tends to be fairly safe as well." The original name of the High Street was Bearwood Hill, which ran from Smethwick Council House to Wimmill Lane. Parts of Bearwood are designated in Edgbaston, with, as a general rule, the border being at Shireland Brook and Portland Road, close to the former Mitchells and Butlers Brewery. Julie Shugnussy has lived and worked in Bearwood since the early 1980s and said she is proud to be from the Black Country. She said, "I always say I am from Bearwood if people ask, although maybe if I'm being abroad, I say from near Birmingham, but I certainly love living in the area. There is a good community feel, some nice places to visit for lunch, and a high street which is very busy and has a good variety of shops. Probably everything you could need in one area." The library at Thimble Mill Road is a great asset. There is a lot going on there, from exhibitions to art to concerts. I sometimes think those facilities are taken for granted. But we have a really good venue there which serves the whole community. Wendy Nichols worked at Thimble Mill Library from 1991 until recently and said she loved the job and the community it served. She said the library is the hub and I really enjoyed working there. I met some good friends, apart from anything else, and a whole range of people would drop in every day. Now I am retired, I am enjoying relaxing, going out for lunches and using time in the day, which wasn't always there before, but it is mainly centred around Bearwood. I don't have to travel too far to meet people. Bob Adams, aged 85, was visiting Bearwood from where he lived in Langley and is a regular visitor. He said, "I used to come here to go to Bearwood Chapel, just down the road, which is kind of when I discovered the area and liked the atmosphere here. Langley has more of a village feel to it, but Bearwood is very busy, and I always call it the posh end of Smethwick. I like coming here on a regular weekly basis, and the bus drops me off right on the High Street." Bob was with friend Nigel Goodwin, who describes himself as a Black Country lad, born and bred. He had come over from Old Hill to Bearwood, where he used to play golf at Worley Woods on a regular basis. He said, "I gave it up. I was no good at it. Now I play computer golf. But it was a nice course, and there is a lot of green areas around Bearwood for a supposedly built-up area of the Black Country. Prices on the High Street are good. You can get a good meal for £6 in the pub or in cafes." The Bear Pub, where Bob and Nigel were enjoying a meal, has attracted many comedians round the years who have gone on to national acclaim, such as Frank Skinner, Ed Byrne and Sean Hughes. Other notable people to have been born or lived in Bearwood include Julie Walters and Christine McVie from Fleetwood Mac. If you would like us to highlight your neighbourhood, please contact daniel.stacey@jpress.co.uk. And before we end, I just want to describe some of the pictures that are in this newspaper article. In the top left corner, we have a picture of St Mary's Church, which sits in the centre of Bearwood. It is a grand building with red bricks, and it's surrounded by what looks to be lots of nature, and it just looks really lovely. It looks like it's a really lovely day. Then to the right of that picture, we have Bearwood Road, which is the High Street of Bearwood. It's quite packed. It's got a lot of shops. I can see what they mean when they say it's got everything that you need there. Then below that, we have Julie Shugnussy and Wendy Nichols, who are enjoying a little like lunch in a cafe. They seem to be very happy. Locals of Bearwood as well. And then we have Nigel Goodwin below that, who used to play golf in Bearwood, as well as Bob Adams, who is a regular visitor. Charges for theft amid crackdown. West Midlands Police have secured more charges for shop theft following more action to tackle retail crime across Sandwell. Officers responded to a report of theft from a business in Rowley Regis on Monday. A 39-year-old male was detained a short while later. Joshua Finlater has since been charged with 3 counts of shop theft and was remanded to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court yesterday. Police were also called following attempts to steal items from a store in Tipton in the afternoon. A 41-year-old man was arrested and Sunil Kanath from Smethwick has now also been charged with 2 counts of shop theft. He was remanded to appear before magistrates in Wolverhampton yesterday. West Midlands Police say they are catching hundreds more suspected shop thieves in the West Midlands as part of an ongoing drive to combat retail crime. Arrests for shop theft offences have risen over 60% in the last 2 years after police changed the way they respond to crime reports. Sandwell South has its own dedicated retail crime team that identify prolific offenders and bring them to justice. Before I begin, I just want to make clear that this is not a letter from me. I'm reading it on behalf of another person. I was arrested at Gaza protest. Last month, I was arrested. It wasn't a surprise. In fact, that was the point of me going to the Labour Party conference in Liverpool and holding a bit of cardboard on which I'd written, "I oppose genocide. I support Palestine action." Here. I'll try to explain why. Firstly, I do oppose genocide. That is what the UN say is taking place in Gaza. I am also opposed to the UK role in assisting Israel in committing genocide, specifically using taxpayers' money to pay for surveillance flights over Gaza to gather information for the Israelis. Also, allowing Israeli arms, companies and associates to manufacture equipment here to be used in the genocide. Secondly, and this is why I personally went to Liverpool, I oppose the proscription of Palestine action as terrorists. Yes, they committed crimes. Yes, they broke the law. Most of them are already held in prison awaiting trial. Many for well over a year. There was no need to prescribe them. The only effect it has is to stop people showing any support for them. That is an attack on freedom, on free speech, and on my freedom. That is why the group Defend Our Juries organised the sign-holding event. For me, Liverpool was about Palestine, but also about the UK, how it is changing and what we want it to be for our children and grandchildren. Here's for differences and peaceful discussion. For me, this is what Britishness is about. Name and address is supplied. Before I begin, I just want to make clear that this is not a letter from me. I'm reading this on behalf of another person. Why not fight for country? Every day, there's a protest by some group about what's going on in their country of birth. I have a question. Who's paying your wages whilst you protest? Or are you on benefits? And another, if you feel so strongly, why don't you go and fight for the country you are protesting for instead of hiding in my country? Answers, very welcome. Name, address supplied. Sweet shop decision to be reviewed on appeal. An appeal has been launched over a decision to reject converting a West Bromwich home into a South Asian sweet shop. Sandwell Council refused a planning application to convert the house in Walsall Road, Stone Cross, West Bromwich, into the sweet shop, saying it would cause too many problems for neighbours. The local authority said the planned conversion of the semi-detached house by Deepak Verma would create extra noise and odours for neighbours and add to existing parking problems. Despite the strong objections from Sandwell Council in refusing the plan, the conversion could still go ahead, after an appeal was lodged with the government's planning inspectors, who will be given the final say. A total of 11 objections were received against the plans from neighbours when the application was submitted earlier this year. The council rejected the plan in August, saying it was inappropriate for the largely residential area. The council's highways officers also objected to the new shop, saying the plans only provided a third of the required parking spaces, and would add to existing problems. The council's planning officers continued. These types of Asian sweet centres increasingly also have an element of ancillary hot food takeaway. And although this is not specifically in the submission documents, they do utilise the services of fast food delivery companies. This would result in increased comings and goings to the premises that would affect residential amenity and also increase demand on street parking. The home's kitchen and living room would make way for the store's counter and seating area, with an outbuilding converted into a kitchen. The shop would open from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day.
Hello, this is Jan Lloyd reading articles from the Express and Star on the 9th of October. Armed gang forces school to go into lockdown. A gang wearing balaclavas and carrying weapons forced a primary school in Sandwell to go into lockdown. Shireland Hall Primary Academy in Montague Road, Smethwick, were forced to take drastic measures to protect staff and pupils on Tuesday afternoon. Reports say a group of masked men entered the playground and threatened children and teachers. West Midlands Police have confirmed they are currently investigating after reports of a group acting suspiciously in the street. A parent reportedly said children saw a group of men wearing balaclavas with weapons in their hands. They added that children have been left traumatised and that some parents refused to send their children to school yesterday in fear of another incident. An alert sent out by the school at 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday said, "We are writing to inform you that Shireland Hall Primary Academy enacted our lockdown procedure at the end of today. The lockdown was initiated as precautionary measure in response to reports of adults on the school site wearing balaclavas and some potential weapons. We contacted the police who attended, advised us on the appropriate course of action and are investigating further. We want to assure you that at no point was any child or staff member in direct harm." A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "We were called to Montague Road, Smethwick, on Tuesday afternoon after reports of a group acting suspiciously in the street. Officers attended and there was no group in the area at that time. Inquiries are ongoing and anyone with more information can contact us via 101, quoting log 3302 of 7th of October. I'm just so grateful screening caught my lung cancer early," by Gurdip Tandy. A cancer survivor from Great Barr has urged people to use a screening programme which helped detect his illness early enough for treatment. Ex-smoker Noel Cunningham urged others to use the lung cancer screening programme, which has seen more than 18,000 people in Sandwell in the last 18 months since it was launched. Around 6,200 people were scanned after being found to be at high risk of developing lung cancer, with scans diagnosing a total of 41 people with stage 1 or 2 lung cancer so far. The screening programme has also detected other forms of cancer in an additional 14 patients, including breast cancer and bowel cancer, and has performed around 700 surveillance scans on patients. Mr Cunningham quit smoking in 2017 following a heart attack. After contracting COVID-19 and still feeling unwell, he visited his GP and was asked to attend a lung cancer screening appointment, which detected stage 3A cancer in his right lung and his thoracic lymph nodes. Following surgery and chemotherapy, he has now been given the all clear. He said, "If I hadn't been sent for this screening, I would have been none the wiser. It's been a bit of a journey, but I've had a lot of fantastic people take care of me and I am so grateful to the lung cancer screening team. I would recommend everyone to go to their appointment. Nobody wants to hear the word cancer, but if I hadn't gone, I could still be here today not knowing I had it." Dr. Suhala Mendes, respiratory and general internal medicine consultant, said patients who receive an early diagnosis are more likely to have successful treatments, so if you're invited for an appointment, please do not hesitate to attend. Our team has supported many patients who have been diagnosed with cancer, and we will continue to dedicate ourselves to fighting this often deadly disease in our local population. The Black Country Lung Cancer Screening Programme is coordinated by the West Midlands Cancer Alliance, the WMCA, and forms a key component of its early diagnosis programme, which aims to improve patient outcomes through detecting cancers at the earliest stages, stage 1 and 2. The West Midlands wide programme is funded by the WMCA via NHS's England's national programme funding, and it has helped reduce health inequalities in areas with some of the country's highest incidences of lung cancer and mortality rates. Screenings are currently delivered out in the community. Those who are registered with a GP in Sandwell and aged between 55 and 74 and smoke or have smoked in the past are eligible for an invite. And the photograph is accompanied by someone lighting up a cigarette. Not sure if it's Mr. Cunningham or not. Deeming Living the Dream to Play for His Beloved Baggies by Lewis Cox. Cole Deeming appreciates making the grade with Albion more than most. The 18-year-old central midfielder is one of the hottest prospects in Lee Downing's under-21 squad and travelled as a substitute for Saturday's 3-0 first-team defeat at Millwall. Deeming has come a long way since he first set foot in the Hawthorns. As a 3-year-old season ticket holder alongside his baggy's mad dad, Neil, in the Birmingham Road End. The Halesowen youngster used to cheer on Peter Odemwingie and cited the remarkable 5-5 draw against Manchester United on Sir Alex Ferguson's farewell in May 2013 among his earliest memories. Now, he has signed 2 professional contracts with his boyhood club, the latest in August of 2027, captained the under-21s at the Hawthorns, made his senior debut and impressed new boss Ryan Mason. "It's every young Albion fan's dream to play," Deeming told the Express and Star. "I'm sure there's many of the young kids in the crowd that would want to do it. I was one of them. My dad started taking me when I was 3 in the Brummie Road and I'm living the dream. I remember being at the top of the Brummie Road and taking my top off and swinging it around." Deeming's mum and dad were at the Hawthorns in a different capacity last week to watch their son lead out the under-21s in continental competition against FC Norgesland. The teenager joined Albion at the age of just 6. He had some involvement at Halesowen Town Colts but began catching the eye of Baggies Academy staff at a young age. Fast forward just over a decade and, age 17, he made his senior debut in the EFL Cup against Fleetwood under Carlos Corberan. Deeming, a ball-playing left-footed midfielder with a penchant for long-range strike, marked his first team bow by unearthing a message posted on his social media from his dad in 2013, which read, "Is there a better feeling than seeing your 6-year-old run out in the colours of the team you've supported all your life?" It has been quite the last 18 months or so for Deeming, who enjoyed a breakthrough spell at under-21s late in the 2023-24 campaign, and found himself a regular last term, which also brought the senior debut. He made an impression on head new coach Mason, himself a former academy coach with Tottenham, this summer, and was included on the pre-season tour to Austria, as well as the 3 first-team match days so far this season. The midfielder has had to adjust, but he has taken it in his stride. He said, "I feel like I've been here so long, it's just kind of normal now. Obviously, there are still times, like when I signed my first pro contract, and I was like, wow. Obviously not that I'd made it, but that I've got this far. Sometimes I've sat back and thought, I'm actually doing it. I'm actually here." Deeming added, "Going into pre-season, it was always a target for me to make an impression, because it's a fresh start, a new manager, new coaching staff. You go in the first day, and I was kind of hoping to be with them, and then from there, it was just about making that good impression and hopefully getting them to like me, which I think I did pre-season. Obviously, I came on in most of the pre-season games. And then, being around the squad a lot now in training has been the main thing for me." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Cole Deeming leading out Albion under-21s at Hawthorns, and then a little inset picture of him making his senior debut against Fleetwood. 3 held over canal death probe. 2 men and a woman are arrested of suspicion of murder after a female's body was discovered in a stretch of waterway. By Daniel Walton. 2 men and a woman have been arrested on suspicion of murder after a woman's body was discovered in a canal. West Midlands police have confirmed that 3 people have been arrested on suspicion of murder after a woman's body was found in the water near Riders Green Road, West Bromwich. The body was discovered at around 11 a.m. on Tuesday morning, with police initially calling the death unexplained. Now, 2 men and a woman have been arrested on suspicion of the murder of a woman as detectives continue their investigation into her death. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said door-to-door inquiries are ongoing, along with CCTV being retrieved and reviewed as we work to establish the circumstances. There will also be more visible police presence in the area over the coming days as the investigation into the incident continues. The two men, one in his 60s and the second in his 20s, and the woman in her 40s all remained in police custody yesterday afternoon with a forensic post-mortem due to be carried out to help establish the cause of the woman's death. Police have now appealed for information on the incident, asking anyone with details to contact them directly. The police spokesman added, anyone with information can contact us on our 101 number or by messaging us on live chat on our website, quoting log 1587 of the 7th of October. If you prefer to remain anonymous, please speak to independent charity Crime Stoppers by phoning 0800 555 111 or going online to crimestoppers-uk.org. And the picture is accompanied by a photograph of the stretch of the canal where the lady's body was found, right by a series of locks where there is a blue tent, incident tent, at the side of the canal.
Hello, this is Rachel, and I've got some readings for you from the 10th of October. How to embrace ageing and combat the fear of getting old. In a society that often idolises youth, ageing can trigger fears of losing relevance, beauty and vitality. And a recent Age UK survey of 2,121 UK adults aged 50 to 65 highlights this concern. The research, which used Kantar online polling, found that nearly half, 46%, of midlife respondents fear getting older, and almost two-thirds, 64%, worry about whether they'll still be able to enjoy life as they age. Paul Farmer, CEO of Age UK, offers some advice on how we can shift our mindset and start to embrace ageing with confidence, curiosity and joy. Start to recognise ageist behaviours. Call out really ageist behaviours, advises Farmer. So an example of this is when somebody older is in hospital and is with a younger person, maybe their adult child, and the older person just gets talked across. Speak up and challenge these kinds of behaviours. Be proactive by staying active. Take that positive step forward and take up regular physical activity, recommends Farmer. Open up about your concerns. I would encourage people to not bottle it up and to openly talk about their concerns, advises Farmer. Focus on the positives. If you have got a bit of time on your hands, there are some fantastic benefits that you get from volunteering, and there is also the utter joy of spending time with your grandchildren. Think about what you enjoy. Dedicate time to the things that you really enjoy, recommends Farmer. Whatever it might be, allocate time to really deepen your understanding and your knowledge of it. Stay connected. Prioritise your friendships and connections that you want to build and sustain, recommends Farmer. Keep learning new things. Do something that will get you out of the house and create that potential for learning and connection, advises Farmer. Age UK is on a mission to change how we age, and as a charity it is working locally, nationally and internationally to make this happen. For more information and ways you can get involved, visit Age UK. Celebrations as Region's New Hospital Marks First Birthday by Daniel Walton. The Black Country's newest hospital has marked its one-year anniversary with a joyous celebration event. Sandwell's Midland Metropolitan University Hospital in Smethwick celebrated its first anniversary on Monday, ending the year with thousands of operations carried out and thousands of patients seen. The hospital, which is operated by the Sandwell and West Birmingham Trust, opened on October 6, 2024, following a six-year delay, and has now marked its one-year anniversary with a special celebratory event. The anniversary was marked by a day full of activities, including a circus skills workshop, Zumba classes and arts and crafts for all ages. As well as activities, there was also a live performance from Dole Drummers and music from Cape Hill Primary School Choir, and local composer Kyle Corbin, who performed pieces that he wrote to mark the Windrush and COVID-19 pandemic. And Seymar Tesfu and Jonas Kfru were invited back for the special celebrations, the parents of the first baby to be born at the hospital. In the year, the Trust revealed that the hospital has carried out 4,750 operations, received 45,217 ambulances and 139,994 patients were seen within the emergency department, as well as 5,177 babies delivered. The hospital has also seen a number of prestigious visitors come through its doors to visit patients and open its wards, including Harry Whitwell and Grady Diangana of West Bromwich Albion, and even King Charles III himself, who performed the official opening. Sir David Nicholson, Chair of the Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust, said, "This past year has been more than just the opening of a hospital. It's been the beginning of a new way of caring for our communities. From improved patient outcomes to stronger community ties, the last 12 months have shown us what's possible when we work differently together. We look forward to sharing more about what's next and continuing to shape a future that puts our patients, people and our population at the heart of everything we do," he added. The super hospital opened following a 6-year delay and was noted as a key milestone and key moment for the region by Trust Chair Sir Nicholson. Diane Wake, Chief Executive of the Sandwell and West Birmingham Trust, said, "The past year has been one of real progress. We're seeing the benefits of our new clinical model, our commitment to prevention, and our focus on community-based care. I would like to thank our staff, partners and our community for their dedication and support." Along with the article is a photograph. The caption reads, "Seymar Tesfu and Jonas Kfru visited the hospital on its first anniversary." And it shows the couple with two children, the youngest of which was the first child to be born at the new hospital. They are surrounded by blue, white and orange balloons and some banners at signs that say happy first birthday. Murder jury told of victims' web searches on pain cures, by Adam Smith. Father of two had been researching online advice for excruciating discomfort. Father of two, Matthew Adams, searched online for cures to excruciating pain in the days after being beaten up in a West Bromwich pub, a court has heard. The 33-year-old, known as Wacker, died on March 23, 2023, just days after he told his doctor he had been beaten up by 8 people. 4 adults and a teenager are on trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court in connection with Mr. Adams' death, 4 of whom are charged with murder. The court heard about the messages and online activity of Mr. Adams in the days before he died. He sent pictures of his injuries to a friend from the Saturday night fight at the Gough Arms and described them as war wounds, and complained, "You can't go anywhere these days." Mr. Adams had ignored doctors' advice to visit Stonecross Medical Centre for a check-up, after calling the GP requesting pain medication on Tuesday, March 21st. He wanted something stronger than Cocodamol, which he was already taking. Mr. Adams had been searching what to do with excruciating pain and how to breathe with chest pains. He returned to the web pages which Google had recommended concerning the questions. His last message was at 5:07 p.m. on Wednesday, March 23rd, and his mobile phone was found on the floor next to his bedside table when he was discovered the following day in his Yew Tree estate home. The jury previously heard Mr. Adams suffered from chest condition which caused serious injuries to his lungs. When he finally was admitted to A&E, he had almost a pint of pus in his lungs. Professor Anthony Fremont, osteoarticular pathologist, confirmed there was evidence of osteomyelitis in the infectious inflammation of bone marrow. He said, due to the nature of osteomyelitis, it is difficult to put a time on when it started to affect the patient. Mark Shorthouse, age 53, Ryan Stanley, age 30, John Wise, age 42, and a 16-year-old boy, all of the Sandwell area, all deny charges of murder, manslaughter and violent disorder. Nicola Stanley, age 39, also of Sandwell, denies violent disorder relating to the case. The trial continues. Along with the article is a photograph of Matthew Adams. And the caption reads, Matthew Adams died after he was allegedly assaulted in the Gough Arms. Region pulls in record tourists and £14 billion for visitor economy. By Fiona Waller-Bork. A record 101.5 million people visited the West Midlands in 2024, with the visitor economy worth £14 billion. The 101.5 million figure is 6 million more than the landmark year of 2022, when the region hosted the Commonwealth Games. West Midlands tourism bosses say the recreational offer, including concerts, tourist attractions and major sporting events, played a significant role in the increase. According to a new report from independent research body Global Tourism Solutions for the West Midlands Growth Company, which covers Birmingham, the Black Country, Coventry and Solihull, visitor numbers have passed the 100 million mark for the first time. Some 2.84 million more people, 2.9%, chose to spend time in the region last year, compared with 2023. The figure also represents an increase of 6 million people in comparison with 2022, when the West Midlands wowed the world at the Birmingham 2022 Commonwealth Games. In what remains a very challenging economic time for tourism and hospitality businesses across the West Midlands and wider UK, the region's visitor economy is now worth a record £14 billion, up £0.94 billion, 7%, on the previous 12 months. Who is visiting? 2024 marked the 150th anniversary of Aston Villa Football Club, which welcomed thousands of international football fans to the region as it hosted the Champions League matches for the first time in 40 years. Birmingham icon and international favourite Cadbury celebrated 200 years since it first opened a shop in 1824 selling cocoa and drinking chocolate in the city's Bull Street. Major events included Bryan Adams and Sean Paul concerts at the CBS Arena, a UK first for Wolverhampton as it hosted the Extreme Sports FISE Experience Series, the Speedo Aquatics GB Diving Championships 2024 in Sandwell, and the Olympics for Sports Organisers, Sport Accord, at the ICC Birmingham. The most common type of tourists to the region were day visitors, accounting for 89.8 million of the record total, with May and August proving to be the most popular months for visiting the West Midlands. Analysis shows that recreational activities, such as watching music concerts and theatre shows, visiting museums and tourist attractions, or participating in or being a spectator at a sporting event, have seen the biggest increase, 10%, in tourist expenditure, a rise of 0.14 billion to 1.54 billion pounds. At 4.9 billion pounds, shopping remains the most valuable sector to the West Midlands, comprising 46.6% of the total direct spend, followed by food and drink. The number of full-time equivalent jobs supported by direct and indirect tourism activities now stands at an all-time high, 114,475, an increase of 1,400, 1.4%, on 2023. The best place to visit. Richard Parker, Mayor of the West Midlands, said, "Wow, a record 101 million visitors, can't be wrong. The West Midlands really is the best place to visit. We've got bags of history, beautiful architecture, colourful stories, exciting attractions and top-class venues. Not forgetting the dedicated workers in the sector who are ready to go the extra mile to make every experience unforgettable. These figures matter because a booming visitor economy means more jobs and more money flowing into our economy, which is good news for my growth plan, as well as our region's status and reputation. We will continue to go all out to attract even more international sporting, cultural and business events while investing in our public transport and other amenities, so visitors can easily explore everything the West Midlands has to offer." Katie Trout, Director of Destination, Marketing and Insight at the West Midlands Growth Company, said, "Great visitor experiences start in the West Midlands. No one should pretend there don't remain strong economic headwinds for our region's tourism and hospitality venues, but it is testament to their hard work that even more people are choosing to spend their time in Birmingham, the Black Country, Coventry and Solihull. With the West Midlands attracting increasing levels of leisure tourists and visitor spend for activities such as concerts, cultural events and sporting fixtures, it shows the importance of creating a world-class, packed and varied calendar for everyone to enjoy." Along with the article are three photographs. The first has the caption, "Special events including a popular 1940s day draw in thousands of visitors to Dudley's open-air Black Country Living Museum," and shows a queue of people outside waiting to go into the Black Country Living Museum. The second photograph has the caption, "Wolverhampton hosted the Extreme Sports FISE Experience Series," and shows a crowd of people watching someone doing tricks on their bike. The final photograph has the caption, "Cadbury celebrated 200 years," and shows someone who is wearing purple, the colour of Cadbury, working with a giant chocolate egg.
Hello, this is Linda, reading from Saturday the 11th of October's Express and Star. Baggies fan who collapsed at game died of natural causes. Devastated family do not think the coroner's recommendations went far enough. The family of a football fan who died after he collapsed with a cardiac arrest during a championship match have said they were hoping for stronger recommendations from a coroner who concluded he died from natural causes. Mark Townsend, 57, died after he collapsed among fellow West Bromwich Albion supporters at Sheffield Wednesday's Hillsborough Stadium on September the 28th, 2024. A two-week-long inquest has heard. Yesterday, Sheffield's senior coroner, Tanyaka Rowden, said she accepted there had been confusion between the paramedics from the private medical team contracted by Sheffield Wednesday, who were the first to get to Mr. Townsend, and those who arrived later from Yorkshire Ambulance Service. But Mrs. Rawdon said she did not believe this caused or contributed to Mr. Townsend's death. The coroner said the decision not to ventilate Mr. Townsend in the Leppings Lane stand before he was moved to the concourse behind is likely to have contributed to, but not directly caused, Mark's death. And she said the same about a decision not to give Mr. Townsend drugs through a cannula while he was in the stand, but she thought this was reasonable in the circumstances. Mrs. Rawdon said in her conclusion, Mark was not cannulated whilst on the stand. As a result, adrenaline, amiodarone were not given after the third defibrillator shock, in line with Resuscitation Council guidelines. While this contributed to, but did not directly cause Mark's death, it was reasonable to make the decision not to cannulate given Mark's position. The only access point being the least efficient and the risk of dislodgement on extraction, she continued, Mark was not ventilated whilst in the stand. While assisted ventilation would not have been possible during the extraction process, it would have been possible to use a bag valve mask whilst Mark was stationary, and the absence of this is likely to have contributed to, but not directly caused, Mark's death. The coroner continued in her conclusions, the attendance of two medical teams on the concourse and two cannulation sites caused confusion between the teams around the drugs being administered to Mark. It cannot be said this confusion caused or contributed to Mark's death. The coroner declined to write a prevention of future deaths report about the way the teams from the private ambulance firm Lambda Medical and the public ambulance service worked together after hearing about ongoing cooperation work, including a major exercise simulation at Hillsborough earlier this year. But she said it was disappointing this work was only just getting underway more than a year since Mr. Townsend's death. Mrs. Rawdon said she looked in detail at the time it took for Mr. Townsend to receive medical treatment, based largely on the CCTV footage of the incident. She said, first defibrillator shock was given 5 minutes and 51 seconds after a West Bromwich fan first raised the alarm, which she said was comparable with the level of treatment expected in a hospital setting. The coroner also said she believed a decision not to stop the match was reasonable, as it would have caused crowd movement, which may have hindered the emergency response. Mrs. Rawdon said she will be writing a prevention of future deaths report to Sheffield Wednesday after voicing concerns about the location of stewards with radios and other stewards knowing how to find them. The coroner praised the efforts of off-duty West Midlands paramedic Chelsea Jones, who was at the match as an away fan and was one of the first to give Mr. Townsend from Albury CPR in the stand. Speaking outside Sheffield's Medico-Legal Centre yesterday, Mr. Townsend's brother, Steve Townsend, said he still had questions about the skills of the Lambda staff in the stadium and the time it took for medics to respond. "I don't think the recommendations go far enough," he said. Mr. Townsend also said he thought the inquest did not focus enough on the difficulties presented to the emergency teams by the confined spaces in the Leppings Lane stand, which is where the Hillsborough tragedy happened in 1989, leaving 97 Liverpool fans dead. "Is it fit for purpose in this day and age, in a ground so synonymous with personal tragedy?" he asked. He said, "I'd like nothing more than to see it in a pile of rubble, to be perfectly honest, and I think that should have been a finding." Aldi rolling out price reduction zones in stores. A major supermarket chain is rolling out new dedicated price reduction zones in stores across the West Midlands, making it to find fresh food bargains. These clearly marked areas will feature discounted bread, fresh produce and other perishable items nearing their use-by date, helping customers to save more money while reducing food waste. The move is part of Aldi's ongoing commitment to making high-quality food more affordable. Items are discounted throughout the day, offering shoppers the chance to save on products that might otherwise go unsold. Luke Emery, National Sustainability Director at Aldi UK, said, "Our customers already know they can rely on us to provide unbeatable value, but our new reduction areas will make it even easier to pick up a last-minute bargain. By creating dedicated reduction zones in-store, we're helping point shoppers towards quality food at cheaper prices, all while cutting down on food waste." Aldi separately partners with community giving platform Neighbourly to donate surplus food from all its UK stores every day. The supermarket also works with Too Good To Go to sell surprise bags that contain a range of Aldi products that are approaching their sell-by date. Learning to play an instrument the right note for mental well-being. Picking up a musical instrument later in life isn't just a fulfilling creative pursuit, it's also a powerful way to keep your brain healthy and engaged. We got in touch with Dr. Stephen Alder, consultant neurologist at Recognition Health, who explained how learning an instrument stimulates key areas of the brain, lifts your mood and supports long-term cognitive function. His message is clear. It's never too late to start. Whether you're reigniting an old passion or trying something completely new, here is why learning to play music could be one of the smartest and most enjoyable investments in your brain health. Helps sharpen memory. Learning and playing an instrument can boost memory later in life. When we learn music, the brain engages in complex processes such as reading notes, coordinating movement, and recalling melodies. This strengthens neural networks linked to memory and attention, explains Alder. Much like exercise for the body, repeated practice reinforces these pathways, improving working memory and long-term recall. Promotes neuroplasticity. Learning an instrument over the age of 60 stimulates new neural connections and strengthens existing ones, says Alder. Each lesson requires motor coordination, auditory processing and problem-solving, forcing the brain to rewire itself. This ongoing challenge helps maintain cognitive flexibility, which is particularly valuable as we age. Improves language and listening skills. Music and language share overlapping networks in the brain, particularly in areas responsible for auditory processing and rhythm, explains Alder. Learning an instrument trains the brain to distinguish pitch, tone and timing with precision, which can translate into sharper listening and improved speech perception. For older adults, this can mean clearer communication, especially in noisy environments, notes the neurologist. Boosts mood and emotional well-being. Playing music stimulates the release of dopamine and endorphins, which are chemicals linked to pleasure and motivation, explains the neurologist. It also lowers cortisol, the stress hormone, helping to reduce anxiety and tension. The act of practicing music requires focus and mindfulness, drawing attention away from worries and promoting relaxation. Stimulates multiple brain regions. The motor cortex controls finger movements, the auditory cortex processes sound, and the hippopotamus supports memory, said Alder. The cerebellum refines timing and coordination, while emotional centres like the amygdala and limbic system respond to the joy and meaning of music. Few activities stimulate the brain as holistically. May help decrease risk of dementia. While no single activity can guarantee dementia prevention, learning an instrument may help reduce risk, says Alder. Cognitive stimulation through music builds what we call cognitive reserve, which is the brain's resilience against age-related decline. By strengthening neural networks and promoting neuroplasticity, musical activity helps the brain compensate if damage from dementia begins. So, what are you waiting for? Dust off the old keyboard or treat yourself to a shiny new guitar. Your mind and mood will thank you. She will forever be in our hearts. The family of a woman found dead in a Black Country canal have paid tribute to her as a beautiful, loving soul. The body of Cherise Bailey, aged 36, was found in water near Riders Green Road in West Bromwich on Tuesday. Two people have been charged in connection with the alleged murder. Yesterday, John Anslow, 64, of West Bromwich, appeared at Wolverhampton Crown Court charged with murder and preventing the lawful and decent burial of a body. Hayley Marie Ferguson, 41, also of West Bromwich, has been charged with preventing the lawful and decent burial of a body and assisting an offender. Justice Michael Chambers, KC, told the pair they would need to return to Wolverhampton Crown Court in November to enter a plea. Specialist officers are supporting relatives of Cherise, and the heartbroken family yesterday released a statement. It said, Cherise was a bright, beautiful, loving soul who was much loved and adored by us all. Words could never truly describe the anger, pain and heartbreak that we are feeling as a family. She will forever remain in our hearts. A police spokesman said, our investigation continues. Anyone with information should call us on 101, quoting log 1587 of the 7th of October. Tramline opening is delayed until next year, Transport Chiefs. The opening of the long-awaited tram link between Wednesbury and Dudley has been delayed until early next year, it has been confirmed. The official announcement comes days after the Express and Star exclusively revealed growing fears that the much-delayed opening will be put back again. The 5-mile tram line was due to have opened last year, but rising costs led to the opening date being put back until autumn this year. But a spokesman for Transport for West Midlands has now confirmed that no trams will be open to the public until 2026. He said construction on the tram line will be finished next month, but no passengers will be allowed to use the service until a comprehensive testing and training regime had been completed. We are working hard with our partners at Midland Metro Limited to launch the new train extension as early as possible in 2026, he said. Our top priority over the weeks ahead is a rigorous schedule of driver training, tram and track testing, and final safety checks to make sure everything is safe and ready to welcome passengers on board. The new extension will fundamentally transform journeys in the Black Country by cutting congestion, improving connectivity, and boosting economic growth by delivering faster, greener travel to thousands more residents and visitors. It has also been announced that Anne Shaw, Executive Director of Transport for the West Midlands, will be leaving her post after 3 years. Mrs. Shaw, who joined the West Midlands Combined Authority 8 years ago as Director of Network Resilience, is leaving to take up a new national transport leadership job in Ireland. Mrs. Shaw was appointed an OBE for her role in the planning and delivery of transport during the Birmingham 2022 Commonwealth Games. Prior to joining the Combined Authority, she spent 26 years working for Birmingham Council's Transport Department.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday, the 13th of October. Residents' anger as battery storage site appeal rejected. Campaigners say justice denied as planning challenge dismissed at High Court. By Rachel Alexander. Community campaigners claim justice has been denied after a planning challenge was dismissed at High Court. The Beacon Action Group has fiercely criticised the Planning Inspectorate and now the High Court for allowing a controversial greenbelt development to go ahead. Plans to build a 3.2-hectare battery energy storage system, known as BESS, off Chapel Lane in Great Bar, was first presented in 2021. Walsall Council refused the application and the applicant, Anesco Limited, appealed the decision to the Planning Inspectorate. In January, it was announced that the Inspector George Baird had sided with Anesco, granting the development to go ahead. In March, Walsall Council challenged the inspector's decision at the High Court, believing the inspector had made fundamental errors in coming to his conclusion. But in September, the court delivered the final blow by dismissing the appeal on the basis that the inspector's reasoning was adequate. Chairman of the Beacon Action Group, Bob Winkle, said, "I am firmly convinced that justice was denied by the planning inspector for the people of Great Bar Village, and notably to the 1,500 school children and staff at the nearby Bar Beacon Matrix Academy. Planning inspectors are expected to be fair and impartial decision makers, ensuring trust in the planning system. They have to consider all evidence and representations from local people and stakeholders in a just manner. This was not the case at our inquiry. Earlier this year, the inspector rejected the extremely serious concerns that at least 700 local residents hold about the explosive nature of these ticking time bomb installations. Walsall Council decided to challenge George Baird's decision, and this came before High Court judge. Notably, nothing was mentioned about the site being in the conservation area, on greenbelt land or adjacent to Grade 2 historic registered parkland and many listed buildings. Consequently, His Honour Judge Jarman KC, having considered the submission, resolved to uphold the application and allow the BESS in Chapel Lane. It was an absolute disgrace, and I urge people across the nation to get together to stop the destruction of our precious green belt before it's too late. It seems to me that often there is no justice for mere mortals, and we have to live with the consequences decided by a few who can afterwards just walk away. A spokesperson for the Planning Inspectorate said, "The inspectors are independent and impartial. When making a decision, the inspector fully considers the evidence submitted at the appeal and takes account of current planning legislation, policy and guidance. The inspector's reasoning is set out in their decision, which can be found on the Planning Inspectorate's appeal portal. Following the issue of the decision, there followed a six-week period during which the decision could be challenged in the High Court. This option was followed, and at the renewal hearing, the judge refused the claimant permission to take their claim forward to a substantive hearing. Care provider nominated for two excellence awards. Business up for a major double 12 months after opening, by Laura Tatton. A Black Country care home is celebrating after being recognised by two prestigious regional awards bodies for outstanding care within the local community. Just over a year since opening its doors, Bridgewater Home Care Sandwell has been named a finalist for Startup Business of the Year at the Black Country Chamber of Commerce 2025 Business Awards. The team has also been shortlisted in the top three for the Excellence in Care Award at the West Midlands Care Association Awards, placing the business firmly among the region's leading care providers. Managing Director Chris Taylor says the nominations reflect the passion, dedication and hard work of the entire team. "We launched Bridgewater Home Care Sandwell with a simple mission to provide the kind of care we would want for our own loved ones. To be recognised not just for the quality of our care, but also for the strength of our business growth is incredibly humbling. It's a real credit to our amazing care team and the clients who place their trust in us every day. Over the past year, Bridgewater Home Care Sandwell has rapidly grown its client base and expanded its team, all while staying true to the ethos of compassionate, personal-centred care. The company has also made a significant impact in the wider community, breathing new life into the Royal Naval Association Club, into a drop-in hub for veterans and ex-service personnel, creating a welcoming space for the connection and well-being, which is having an open day on Friday, October the 17th, from 12 noon onwards. The community-first approach has become a cornerstone of the company's identity, earning praise from local leaders and forging strong partnerships with voluntary groups, health professionals and families across the borough. The upcoming award ceremony promised to be a proud moment for the Sandwell team. The Black Country Chamber of Commerce Business Awards will take place later this autumn, while the West Midlands Care Association's Excellence in Care Awards are due to be held in the coming weeks. Chris added, "Win or lose, being recognised at this level so early in our journey is something we're incredibly proud of. It shows that the values we build this business on, compassion, integrity and community, really do make a difference. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit the website or call 01384 590 020. This is from the comment column. The newspaper industry today launches a concerted campaign on the issue of public notices. That may sound like a dry subject, but it is one that should concern every one of us. Ministers have launched a consultation on licensing reform that includes a proposal to remove the statutory requirement for alcohol licensing notices to be advertised in print in local papers. We believe that will shroud local communities in secrecy. Put simply, if a pub near you wants to extend its opening hours, create outdoor seating or put on live music, you will know nothing about it until it happens. And this could be only the start of it. The government is hungry for growth at any cost. It talks of getting rid of red tape or stopping the blockers. It appears to believe transparency and scrutiny are an inconvenience, an annoyance. Public notices are published in newspapers on issues of pub licensing, but also planning and major roadworks. They allow communities to know what may be impacting on their lives and to respond accordingly. Pub licensing applications may be the first to go, and then you can be sure that planning issues will be next. Applications for greenfield housing or factory units or a new supermarket, which are all currently in the public domain, will be decided by grey-suited officials with the rest of us left in helpless ignorance. We should stress again that we are a big supporter of pubs. We want them to be successful and to grow, but the public deserve to know when developments are planned. That is our democratic right, and that is why it is essential public notices remain in print and online for everyone to see. It is refreshing to bring good news in retailing, especially from a department store. There is much doom and gloom around, especially since the closure of Marks & Spencer's flagship store in Wolverhampton, as well, of course, as much missed names like Beatty's and Debenhams. But Primark proves that the concept can still work, and today we bring you news of plans by Harvey Norman to create more department stores across the wider West Midlands. It says it has been heartened by its first year at Maryhill Shopping Centre and has its sights on another 4 or 5 stores in the region. That is great news for those who like to physically browse before they buy and will create hundreds of jobs. More importantly, it shows there is still confidence in the concept of bricks and mortar retailing.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz, and this week's round, it's music. Question 1. Which same title, different song is shared by the Bee Gees and Aaliyah? Question 2. Recorded by Tina Turner, who wrote the Bond movie theme GoldenEye? Question 3. Who released the 1974 album Fulfillingness First Finale? Question 4. Forrest and Reed are the surnames of which female duo who topped the chart with their only hit in 1978? Question 5. Yesterday features on which Beatles album? Question 6. How many of Take That's 12 number one singles have a one-word title? Question 7. Which country and rockabilly singer had the real name Harold Lloyd Jenkins? Question 9. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone, is a line from which chart topper of 1999? And question 10. To which family of instruments does the marimba belong? How's your music knowledge?
Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the music round. Question 1. Which same title, different song is shared by the Bee Gees and Aaliyah? More Than a Woman. Question 2. Recorded by Tina Turner, who wrote the Bond movie theme GoldenEye? Bono and The Edge. Question 3. Who released the 1974 album Fulfillingness First Finale? Stevie Wonder. Question 4. Forrest and Reed are the surnames of which female duo who topped the chart with their only hit in 1978? Althea and Donna. Question 5. Yesterday features on which Beatles album? Help! Question 6. How many of Take That's 12 number one singles have a one-word title? According to the Express and Star, the answer is 5. According to Google, the answer is 4. Pray, sure, patience and shine. I'll let you all argue about the 5th. Question 7. Which country and rockabilly singer had the real name Harold Lloyd Jenkins? Conway Twitty. Question 8. Which surname was shared by Sonia, Yaz and Chubby Checker? Evans. Question 9. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone, is a line from which chart topper of 1999? Everybody's free to wear sunscreen. And question 10. To which family of instruments does the marimba belong? The percussion section. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye.
DNF soundings.
And now our totally new item, Dog School, featuring Charlotte the trainer and Buster the doggy apprentice.
Hello, this is Charlotte from Guide Dogs, and I'm here with the first update on my most recent recruit into guide dog training, Buster. Buster is a yellow Labrador. He is 1 year and 6 months old. He has had a slightly delayed entry to training due to a tail injury that he sustained during puppy raising, which took a long time to heal. Buster arrived 2 weeks ago, and since then we have been spending our time getting him settled with his foster family, working on building a bond, and doing some straightforward training to ease him into his new routine. Buster has settled really well with his fosterers, who also have 2 cats. Living with cats is a new experience for Buster, but I chose this family for him because Buster leans more towards sensitivity than being boisterous, and I suspected he would fit in well with the cats, who are young and playful, and not afraid to tell him off. He was very interested in the cats to begin with, but he is now able to settle around them, which is great. It's really beneficial for our dogs to have spent time around cats, as lots of people on our waiting list have cats. Most of our dogs will adapt to a household with cats, but if they are already relaxed around them, it means that more time can be dedicated to other aspects of client training when a dog is matched. There have been a few issues that I've needed to work on with Buster. Firstly, he's a bit of a scavenger in the home. Unfortunately, he is quite intelligent and worked out how to open the kitchen door to get the cat's food, so we have needed to block this off. He has also needed a trip to the vets as he ate a sock out of the fosterer's shoe. These are issues that need to be prevented through management while I work on behaviours like drop, which can be used as a backup. Buster does have a history of eating non-food items. At puppy raising, he ate a hanky, which needed to be surgically removed, so it is a known behaviour for him. Buster is also quite underconfident around other dogs. At the moment, he's getting exercise in a hired field on the weekends with his fosterers while I work on building his confidence during the week. Thankfully, this has really improved, and this week I will be showing the fosterers how to free run Buster in their local park. Day to day, Buster and I have been going out and doing lead walks in quiet residential areas, and I have been gently introducing behaviours like stopping at the kerb, pausing for narrow gaps, and moving around obstacles with plenty of room. And Buster has picked all of these up really well and has lovely lead behaviour. He walks nicely without much pulling and isn't too distracted by people, interesting smells, litter, or anything else that we have come across. He also hasn't been fazed by noises from builders, traffic, car alarms and similar, so I feel that soon he will be able to do his first walks in harness. These first few weeks are predominantly about assessing the dog, getting a feel for their personality and their strengths and weaknesses so the training can be adjusted accordingly. Aside from the scavenging and slight underconfidence, Buster is doing well and I don't have any concerns about his progress so far. He's taken really well to travelling in the van, and next week I will likely take him on a quiet train, and if this goes well, we can progress to the bus. That's all for now. I will continue with another update on Buster in a few weeks' time.
TNF Soundings.
Virtual coffee and conversation invitation each Wednesday from 12 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Weekly virtual coffee and a chat using Zoom. You will need a device that can connect to the internet, such as a smartphone, tablet or computer with a microphone. Most laptop computers have a built-in microphone and camera, or you may have a webcam already set up. It will be first come, first served. So would you please indicate if you will be attending by contacting SVI by emailing info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk. A Zoom meeting invitation will be sent to the first 8 people who respond. Please note, if you have been part of the conversation previously, you will still have to respond confirming you wish to participate, as a fresh invite is produced for every session. We will also include links for you to download the Zoom app to your devices for both Android and iOS users on your first time of participating. If you don't get through this time, don't worry. You will be added to the next coffee and conversation meeting. Telephone 0121 525 4810. Email info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is the Wharfdale Talking Newspaper, with a selection of audio-described TV programmes from the main channels, starting Saturday, the 18th of October, until Friday, 24th of October, 2025. This selection was compiled and is being read by me, Glenys. So, on Saturday, the 18th of October, on BBC One, at 11:30 a.m, Rick Stein's Cornwall. Rick rides one of the world's most scenic ferry routes and bakes a tasty veggie tart. At 1 p.m, Bargain Hunt. Eric Knowles and the team are in Nottinghamshire. At 2:30 p.m, Escape to the Country. Alistair helps a young couple from Edinburgh find a rural home. At 3 p.m, DIY SOS. The team helps 8-year-old Rafi stay at home with his family after a life-changing illness. At 6:30 p.m, Strictly Come Dancing. Our couples are back on the dance floor. Who will take the top spot this week? At 9:20, there's the fourth episode of Nine Bodies in a Mexican Morgue. The remaining passengers believe they have found the traitor in the group. BBC Two. Today starts with children's programmes at 6:15. Followed at 6:25 by Big Lizard. At 6:35, there's Super Happy Magic Forest. At 7, there's Pokemon Horizons. At 7:40 a.m., There's gladiators, epic pranks, when Giant is pranked by Nitro when he appears as a guest of honour at a fake school awards ceremony. At 11:30 a.m, Kelvin's big farming adventure, when Kelvin and Liz buy some rare breed sheep and attempt to sell their fleeces. At 4:05, we have animal babies, first year on Earth. A five-month-old elephant bonds with a new family, and a sea otter pup must find out what is safe to eat. At 5:30 p.m, what are UFOs? Scientists try to unravel the mystery of the strangest objects in our skies. And from 6:25 p.m, there's the film Close Encounter of the Third Kind. Power repairman Roy Neary has an encounter with an alien spacecraft and becomes consumed with the desire to see it again. ITV. At 6 a.m, we have Raymond Blanc's Royal Kitchen Gardens from Highgrove, home to King Charles III, with impressive gardens and educational centres. Followed at 6:30 by James Martin's Great British Adventure. James and Paul have now reached Paul's hometown of Belfast, and he gives James a personal tour of the city. At 7:30 a.m, there's the film Jumanji, an adventure comedy starring Robin Williams. Two children play a magical board game that releases unexpected dangers into their world. At 11:30 a.m, there's Champions Full Gallop. Racetrack rivalries reach boiling point as jockeys go head-to-head in a competition for a £500,000 prize. At 6:35 p.m, the Chase Celebrity Special. Bradley Walsh again hosts as four celebrities hope to win thousands of pounds for their chosen charities. At 7:35, celebrity catchphrase, Stephen Mulhern hosts a celebrity special of this classic game. And at 8:35 p.m, there's the 1% Club. Lee Mack presents the ultimate leveller of quiz shows. Channel 4. From 8 a.m, there are three episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond. From 9:25 a.m, Frasier, Taking Liberties. From 10:25, there are two episodes of The Simpsons. At 2:30 p.m, George Clark's Amazing Spacers. A couple renovating an army lorry and old caravan. A man builds a luxury cabin on his family's farm, and George checks out a home that was once a skip. At 4:35 p.m, Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It. A couple are at loggerhead over their five-bedroom chalet bungalow. Followed at 5:35 by Grand Designs. A couple dreamt of living in a giant treehouse, but the money ran out. Are they finally living up in the branches? At 7 p.m, Bettany Hughes's Treasures of the World. Bettany journeys along the Silk Road in Uzbekistan, uncovering new finds and encountering sun worship and Zoroastrian funeral rites. At 8 p.m, Great British Train Journeys from Above. Aerial cameras track the Festiniog Railway as it races from coastal Port Madoc to Blaenau Festiniog's slate mines. And at 9 p.m, The Menu is a black comedy horror set in an exclusive restaurant on a private island, where revenge is the main ingredient on the menu. Sunday, 19th of October, BBC One. At 2:20 p.m, there's Lifeline. Richard Clifford presents an appeal on behalf of REACT, a charity dedicated to helping children with life-shortening illnesses. Followed at 2:30 p.m. by Hamza's Hidden Wild Islands. Wildlife cameraman Hamza Yassin films the natural spectacle of badgers, adders and nightingales. At 3:30, there's the film Shaun the Sheep, Farmageddon. When an alien crash lands near the farm, Shaun has to help her return home before the Ministry of Alien Detection discovers her. At 6:15 p.m, there's the second episode of Hamza's Hidden Wild Isles. Followed at 7:15 by Strictly Come Dancing, the results. Which couples will have secured a place in Icons Week? And at 9 p.m, there's the second episode of Riot Women. BBC Two. At 10:30, Nadia's British Food Adventure. Nadia meets a farmer in Ely who makes crisps. At 11:30, there's Kelvin's Big Farming Adventure. rare breed pigs are on the shopping list for Kelvin's growing farm. At 1 p.m. there's the film The Longest Day, a World War II movie recounting the events of the D-Day landings. At 4:35 p.m, Attenborough's Wonder of Songs, where David chooses 7 songs and explores the significance of these songs in the lives of their species. At 6:20 p.m. we have Cheap Flights, What They Really Mean for You, investigating the controversial plans to change how we fly. At 7:20 p.m, Eva Longoria, Searching for Spain. Eva takes a tour of San Sebastian's best bars and travels to a remote village where grilled peas bring a tear to her eye. Followed at 8 p.m. by Pilgrimage, The Road to the Scottish Isles. With the end of their pilgrimage looming, the celebrities get a taste of monastic life. At 9, there's Rob Brydon's Honky Tonk Road Trip. Rob explores the rich influence of black musicians on the history of country music. And the evening finishes at 10:45 p.m. with the film Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, a Cold War thriller about a retired MI6 agent who must track down a Soviet mule. ITV. At 6 a.m. we have Simply Raymond Blanc, Spices. Raymond cooks a feast of roast butternut squash with chorizo, chickpeas with tahini dressing, and shows the best way to cook padron peppers. This is followed at 6:50 by M&S Dress the Nation. Follows the 3 remaining designers as they go head-to-head in their biggest challenge yet by creating their own full collections. On now to 2:15 p.m. with the film Despicable Me 3, an animated comedy with Gru facing a major identity crisis when he's fired from the Anti-Villain League. Followed at 4 by another film, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Harry helps form a secret Hogwarts training group when rumours of Lord Voldemort's return are questioned. At 8 p.m, there's Beat the Chasers. Bradley Walsh hosts as mystery chaser Maverick tries to live up to being part of the greatest quiz team in the world. Followed at 9 by Frauds, a crime drama set in Andalusia. Sam enlists an old friend's help but leaves Bert feeling betrayed. And the evening rounds off at 10:20 with 2 hour-long episodes of Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, sci-fi prequel. Channel 4. From 7:40 a.m. there are 2 episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond. And from 1 p.m. 2 episodes of The Simpsons. At 4:30 p.m. there's Devon and Cornwall. From Brixham, where a maverick skipper who live streams his latest catch and a Cornwall engineer gets a replica of the ionic steam locomotive, the Puffing Devil, back up to full steam. At 5:50, there's the Great British Bake Off, and it's meringue week. Who can keep their cool? Whose souffle will be in disarray? At 6:55, the world's biggest cruise ship. At 20 decks high and almost a quarter of a mile long, Icon of the Seas is the world's biggest cruise ship. At 8 p.m, Educating Yorkshire. Year 11 feel the pressure building as the school year draws to a close. Mrs. Alley works on attendance numbers, and Year 10's Darcy and Alexa compete to become head girl. Followed at 9 by Hunted. One of the fugitives has gone solo and is feeling the pressure as the hunters prepare to clear him out. And will a bid for some home comforts backfire? And the evening rounds off from 10 p.m. with 2 episodes of Gogglebox. Channel 5. Children's programmes start from 6:05 in the morning with Mix-Ups, followed at 6:15 with Peppa Pig. At 6:40, there's Thomas the Tank Engine and Friends, and from 7:10, 2 episodes of Peppa Pig. Now to those programmes which are on at the same time every day. BBC One, at 11:30 a.m, Homes Under the Hammer. At 2:30 p.m, Lost and Found in the Lakes. At 3:45 p.m, Repair Shop. At 5:15, Pointless. And at 7:30, EastEnders. On ITV, at 2 p.m, there's Dickinson's Real Deal. This is not on the Friday. At 7:30, there's Emmerdale, followed at 8 by Coronation Street, which is not on Tuesday or Thursday. Channel 4. 6:25 a.m. King of Queens. 7:50 a.m. Everybody Loves Raymond. 9:10 Frasier. This is on at 8:40 on Monday. 11:10 American Pickers, Searching for Antiques in the USA. And at 1:10, Find It, Fix It, Flog It. This programme is not on Monday. Monday, 20th of October, BBC One. At 9 p.m, Blue Lights. Grace offers up a secret about her past in an attempt to connect with Lindsay. And Aisling's erratic behaviour forces Tommy to make a heartbreaking decision. BBC Two. At 4:15 p.m, we have Trawlermen, hunting the catch from the Bristol Channel, the shipping lanes and the North Sea. And now on to 9 p.m, with the secret letters of Mary Queen of Scots. Experts decipher a mysterious cache of coded letters. Followed at 10 p.m. by Leonard and Hungry Paul. After his mother's death, Leonard begins to open up his world with the help of a new colleague. His best friend, Hungry Paul, reluctantly volunteers at the hospital. And this evening's programmes end at 11 p.m. with the film Manhunter. An FBI criminal profiler is called out of retirement to assist on a serial murder case. ITV. At 9 p.m. there's Frauds, the final part of this crime drama. And at 11:40 we have Union Black, Fresh Cuts 2025. A light-hearted but honest insight into the relationship between the UK's Black African and Caribbean communities in a celebration of culture, camaraderie and Black Britain. Channel 4. At 8 p.m, there's a documentary from the Dispatches team, Will AI Take My Job? From Healthcare to the Law and More, Dispatches pits human versus machine. Who's the best worker? This is followed at 9 p.m. by Hunted. Two fugitives stumble into a face-to-face with the hunters, and 10K waits in a Birmingham library. Are any fugitives brave enough to go for it? At 10 p.m, there's Social Media Monsters. The 18-year-old from leafy suburbs was groomed on social media by a country lines gang, and his life tragically spiralled out of control. And at 11:05, there's a repeat of yesterday's episode of Educating Yorkshire. Channel 5. Children's programmes start at 6 a.m. with three episodes of Peppa Pig. At 7:45, there's Tim Rex in Space, followed at 9 by another episode of Peppa Pig. And on to 1:45 p.m. with Home and Away. At 7 p.m, we have Motorway Cops, Catching Britain's Speeders, with police uncovering a crack pipe and stake out a suspected drug dealer. At 9, there's The Forsytes, a brand new star-studded period drama, following the lives, loves, trials and triumphs of a wealthy Victorian family. And the evening rounds off at 11:15 with Police Interceptors, a high-octane documentary series. Tuesday, 21st of October, BBC One. At 8 p.m, there's Joe Schwoss, exploring forgotten young dads, young men navigating the highs and lows of parenthood. At 10:40 p.m, there's In My Own Words, a new series where authors talk about their lives. Today, it's Frederick Forsyth, who was a pilot, a foreign correspondent, a reporter, and an MI6 informant before he became a best-selling author. And at 11:25, there's the fifth episode of Film Club. On to BBC Two. At 4:15, there's Trawlermen, Hunting the Catch. Ships are vulnerable to collision during Storm Arwen. At 7 p.m, we have Nigella at My Table, with recipes for spiced lamb kofta, golden egg curry, rose and pepper pavlova, and white chocolate cheesecake. At 8 p.m, there's Digging for Britain, from Orkney, investigating a tomb as old as the pyramids, and in the Scilly Isles, an American warship sunk in the First World War. At 9:45 p.m, there's The World's Most Dangerous Roads from Albania. ITV. At 8 p.m, there's Love Your Garden from Enfield, where Alan and the team help a mother whose son was tragically murdered. At 9:15pm, there's a new documentary series, TikTok Murder Gone Viral, which investigates crimes linked to social media. And the evening's programmes finish at 10:45 with the 1% Club, with contestants faced with increasingly difficult problems to solve. Channel 4. At 8pm, there's the Great British Bake Off, and it's dessert week. Please note this is repeated on Thursday at 10pm. At 9:15pm, there's Worlds Apart, with intergenerational teams hunting for 50k in Hiroshima. At 10:15, we have Celebrity Gogglebox, followed at 11:15 by Gogglebox. Wednesday, 22nd of October, BBC One. At 8pm, there's The Repair Shop, where the team hope to repair a faded 1958 Cup Final T-shirt, a small Bible, and an ornate Punjabi hookah. This is followed at 9 by The Celebrity Traitors, hosted by Claudia Winkleman. BBC Two. At 4:15, there's The Wonders of the Monsoon, how lives of humans and animals are shaped by this remarkable weather event. At 7:30pm, there's Jules and Greg's Wild Swim, with the pair braving the choppy waters off the Isle of Harris. Followed at 8 by Tropic of Cancer with Simon Reeve, when Simon visits Egypt and Saudi Arabia. At 9, we have Fake or Fortune, when Fiona Bruce and Philip Mould explore whether a painting by Helen McNichol, one of Canada's leading artists of the early 20th century, is a fake or not. Followed at 10 by The Celebrity Traitors Uncloaked, with Ed Gamble talking to banished and murdered players. ITV. At 9pm we have The Hack, starring David Tennant as the journalist uncovering phone hacking at the News of the World. At 10:50, there's the next episode of Long Lost Family, with Mark searching for his brother who was adopted and Jane searching for her three siblings. Channel 4. At 8pm, there's Location, 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 with Kirsty and Phil catching up with people they have helped to find their forever homes. Followed at 9 by Grand Designs, with Kevin MacLeod helping Pep and Marlene, who, following Pep's cancer diagnosis, decide to build their new home in Surrey. And at 11:05, there's Britain's Most Expensive Homes, where two prime properties in Cornwall are up for sale. Thursday, the 23rd of October, BBC One. At 8pm, there's Dragon's Den. Will the dragons sign up to any of the proposals before them? From an educational games platform to a tattoo aftercare cream. Followed at 9 by The Celebrity Traitors, which continues with a mission to get into the mind of a traitor, though one wrong move could be disastrous. BBC Two. At 4:15pm, another episode of Wonders of the Monsoon, when elephants, monkeys, mosquitoes and humans attempt to survive the onslaught of the monsoon. At 8pm, there's Highland Cops, who have incidents ranging from lost walkers in Glencoe, a suspected gunshot attack on a protected species in the Cairngorms, and a laboratory full of dangerous chemicals in Inverness. This is followed at 9 by The Ridge, a new psychological thriller set in New Zealand, with a Scottish medic suspecting her sister's death just before the wedding was not an accident. At 9:45, Saving Lives at Sea rescues a cargo ship off the southeast coast of Ireland. And at 10:05, The Celebrity Traitors Uncovered hears from more banished and murdered traitors. ITV. At 8pm, there's the Pride of Britain Awards, an event which celebrates Britain's unsung heroes and heroines. At 10:50, The Dark Knight Rises is the concluding film of the trilogy, when Batman is forced out of retirement to don his cloak and cowl again to save Gotham City from a new threat of annihilation. Channel 4. At 8pm, there's George Clark's Homes in the Wild, where George braves the wilds of New Zealand to explore a community living off-grid. And at 9pm, there's Taskmaster, where contestants have to pull off a heist, pay homage to their heroes, and shout about food while waving a mallet. Friday, 25th of October. BBC One. At 8 p.m, DIY SOS helps a group of siblings mourning the recent loss of their mother. At 9:30, there's How Are You? It's Alan Partridge, with Alan in the Peak District wondering whether nature can heal a troubled mind. BBC Two. At 4:15 p.m, Wonders of the Monsoon charts the return of dry winds, which bring drought and leads to deadly rivalries at the remaining waterholes. At 7, there's Monty Don's Spanish Gardens, with Monty continuing his journeys around the gardens of southern Spain. Followed at 9 by Agatha Christie, Lucy Worsley on the Mystery Queen, exploring Christie's unexplained disappearance. ITV. At 10:45 p.m, there's Champions Full Gallop from a sold-out Boxing Day crowd at Kempton Park as two horses face off. Channel 4. At 7:30 p.m, Unreported World starts its new series with Sex, Power and Money, South Africa's Slay Queens, who are monetizing South African dating culture. At 8 p.m, we have The Great British Bake Off, An Extra Slice, where Prue Leith, Harry Hill and Melvin Odum review key events from Dessert Week. And the evening rounds off at 9 p.m. with Gogglebox. That's the end of my choice of programmes for you this week. I hope you find something of interest. So, goodbye.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, October 18th. The Barretts of Wimpole Street is a 1972 adaptation of a 1930 stage play starring Dorothy Tooton and Jeremy Brett as Victorian poets Elizabeth Barrett and Robert Browning, whose secret courtship remains one of the most famous true-life romances. Radio 4 Extra, 11 a.m. or 5 p.m. on Saturday. Opera on 3 presents a performance of Handel's Rodelinda from this past summer at Garsington Opera, with soprano Lucy Crowe in the title role and Tim Mead as her husband, King Burattarido. One of Handel's most successful operas, Radio Times describes it as a dizzying confection of 18th century intrigue and knockout arias. Radio 3 for Opera on 3, Saturday evening at 6. An archive on 4, A People's History of Gaza, tells the history of Gaza from the 1940s to the 2010s through the personal experiences of ordinary people, including a teacher, smuggler, birdwatcher, musicians and doctors. Radio 4, 8 p.m. Sunday, October 19th. In this week's Private Passions, Michael Barclay welcomes Reading-born poet Holly McNeish, whose work now reaches audiences of millions through her books, performances and short videos. In 2017, she won the Ted Hughes Award for her book Nobody Told Me. Radio 3, Sunday lunchtime, 12 noon. And the Radio 3 Sunday feature has particular relevance this week. Entitled Requiems for the Firestorm, Dresden's Musical Aftermath, it explores the music created in the aftermath of the Allied bombing of Dresden one night in 1945, which resulted in the killing of some 25,000 people and the levelling of one of the jewels of European Baroque. Radio 3, 7:15 on Sunday evening. And in the Finehorn Garden, sound designer Jonathan Webb listens out for audio evidence of fairies, fauns and nature spirits at the New Age Finehorn settlement at the northeast coast of Scotland, which was set up in 1962, and where, despite the barrenness of the conditions, flowers, plants and edible produce have flourished. Radio 4 for this one, same time, 7:15 p.m. on Sunday. On to programmes then that run each day and at the same time from Monday to Friday. So same time, same radio station, each day of the week, Monday to Friday. Book of the week is Death of an Ordinary Man, Sarah Perry's memoir about the last days of her father-in-law's David's life, when she and her husband cared for him at home during the 9 days between his cancer diagnosis and death. She says she learned that dying like living requires skills and grace and help and friendship and tenacity. So learning how to live will teach you how to die. Radio 4, 11:45 in the morning, all week, or repeated just after midnight each day. Book of the week. The House at number 48 is the story of a man's quest to uncover his family's dark past and reclaim a fortune stolen under the Nazis. It's in 10 parts. It's on Radio 4 all week at 1:45 in the afternoon. Composer of the week is Johann Strauss the Younger, whose operettas and Viennese waltzes became so popular he was dubbed the Waltz King. Saturday, October 25th, will be the 200th anniversary of his birth. Composer of the week, Johann Strauss the Younger, Radio 3, all week at 4 p.m. In the essay, The Song Detectorists, Matthew Bannister continues his travels across England to find out about the music discovered in county record offices and reimagined for the 21st century by folk musician and songwriter Nancy Kerr. Radio 3 for The Song Detectorists, 9:45 p.m. all week, Monday to Friday. And Book at Bedtime is North Woods by Daniel Mason, the 10-part story of a single house in New England, told through the lives of those who inhabit it across the centuries. Radio 4 all week, 10:45 p.m. On to the rest of the highlights for the rest of the week, beginning with Monday, October 20th. Welcome to our village. Please invade carefully is the pilot episode for a new sitcom by Eddie Robson, starring Catherine Parkinson and Julian Wintutt. Radio 4 Extra, 8 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or 7 p.m. on Monday. The Tax Conundrum is a new three-part series which may sound a little dry, but according to the Radio Times, presents the issue, in essence, the mess that the UK tax system is in a new and fascinating way. Radio 4 on Monday morning, 11 o'clock. And Are You Still Awake? A series of 5 15-minute dramas by Russell Davis, originally broadcast in 1994, featuring real-life couples as the actors in each episode. In this installment, Prunella Scales and Timothy West star as Sonia and Charles, who share stories of their war work. Radio 4 Extra, Monday afternoon, 3:45 or 9:45 p.m. Tuesday, October 21st. In the afternoon drama, Monday, but on Tuesday, four lives cross paths during the course of one day, revealing aspects of themselves and four different accounts of what they did and saw. The afternoon drama is called Monday. It's on Tuesday, Radio 4 at 2:15. When Kevin Met Sadie is about the lasting influence of the novels by Joan Lingard, written for young people and featuring a Catholic boy and a Protestant girl during the Troubles in Northern Ireland in the 1970s. Radio 4, 4 p.m. when Kevin Met Sadie. And following this, What's Up Doc, in which identical twin doctors Chris and Zan van Tugelen take a deeper look into how age, culture and location shape a person's ability and desire to nap. Radio 4, 4:30 p.m. on Tuesday. And as it is a Tuesday, don't forget In Touch with news and information for the blind and partially sighted. Radio 4, 8:40 p.m. Wednesday, October 22nd, first of a new seven-part series of Life-Changing. Dr. Sean Williams talks to Jeff Steer, who suffered trauma after service as a medic in the Falklands War. He explains how the charity Medical Detection Dogs helped him work through his issues and regain his freedom and sense of worth after years of struggling. Life-Changing, Radio 4, 9 a.m. Wednesday. In another of the Are You Still Awake mini-dramas, Imelda Staunton and Jim Carter star as an acting couple. Radio 4 Extra, 3:45 in the afternoon or 9:45 at night. Wednesday's Radio 3 in Concert was recorded last Friday at the Barbican. It features the BBC Symphony Orchestra in works by Puccini, Rishbigi and Turkish pianist and composer Faisal Say, together with soloist and Radio 3 broadcaster Jess Gillam in the London premiere of Anna Klein's saxophone concerto Grasslands. Radio 3 in Concert, Radio 3, 7:30, Wednesday night. Thursday, October 23rd. Zeno's Paradoxes is the third in a selection of archive episodes of In Our Time, first broadcast in 2016. Melvin Bragg and guests discuss the paradoxes attributed to the pre-Socratic philosopher Zeno of Elea, which have stimulated mathematicians and philosophers for millennia. Radio 4, 9 a.m, Thursday. Another of Russell Davis's Are You Still Awake features Judy Dench and Michael Williams as a couple taking the overnight sleeper from Edinburgh, but unable to sleep. Radio 4 Extra, 3:45 or 9:45 p.m. on Thursday. And Radio 3 in Concert comes live from the City Hall's Glasgow and features the Scottish Symphony Orchestra in a programme of music that includes Sibelius's Second Symphony, Mozart's incidental music for the play Thamos, King of Egypt, and pianist Elizabeth Leonskaya plays one of Mozart's most celebrated piano concertos. Radio 3, 7:30, Thursday night. Finally, Friday, October 24th, and Genial Geordies, Terry and Bob, played by James Bolam and Rodney Bewes, return for the second series of radio adaptations of the classic 60s sitcom The Likely Lads. Radio 4 Extra, Friday morning at 8, 12:30 lunchtime, or if you prefer, 6:30 in the evening. Heart and Soul is the story of Timothy Cho, whose parents fled North Korea, leaving his 9-year-old self behind. 8 years later, he decided to follow them to China. He was captured, imprisoned, escaped again, and met a gangster in Shanghai who encouraged him to pray. His conversion to Christianity has led to a life fighting for human rights in his home country. Presented by journalist Mike Waldridge, BBC World Service, Heart and Soul, 1:30, Friday lunchtime, or 10:30 at night. Finally, Friday night is Music Night, live from the Chichester Festival Theatre. Richard Balcombe conducts the BBC Concert Orchestra in a tribute to New York crooner Tony Bennett, who died in 2023. Friday night is Music Night, presented by Katie Derham, Radio 3, 7:30 p.m. That's it. Thank you to Leslie for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday, the 14th of October. Albion memories are helping to light up dementia-hit lives. This article is by Lewis Cox. Every Wednesday, those suffering from or living with somebody who has dementia or Alzheimer's gather at the Hawthorns for companionship and to bring a light to their eye. That is the view of organiser John Harmer, the Albion Supporters Club chairman, who has run the successful weekly class for more than a decade. The Memories Group, an Albion Foundation-led initiative, has supported hundreds of Albion supporters, football fans or local members of the public living with the illness. It also provides respite for their loved ones and carers. Homer is joined by legendary former Albion defender Ali Robertson each Wednesday morning for 2 hours from 10 a.m. as between 20 to 30 members gather in the stadium's Nigel Pearson media suite, overlooking the pristine playing surface to rekindle memories that may have faded. It helps them remember, bring back memories, said Homer, who turned 70 this year. You see the light come on in their eyes. It's lovely. It's very rewarding, and I come up with stories that sometimes even myself and Ali haven't heard, which is always tremendous. It's just, as you can see from the ambience, it's just a great group. They're all friends. It's a social group now as well, and they can share the tears and they can share the joy, and it's great. I just can't talk about it enough. Members' club enjoy memorabilia and share stories from their experiences both with the Albion and outside of football. The group was initially a six-week programme and an idea of the therapy and recovery unit at Edward Street Hospital in the town. The programme became a weekly initiative by the club's foundation arm due to its success. There is generally a weekly guest who, with Homer, sparks conversation and humour among those present. The host's unique humour and charisma plays a big role in the atmosphere. Albion's successful former technical director, Dan Ashworth, who went on to work for England, Brighton, Newcastle and Manchester United, recently visited. Former defender Robertson added, "It's great to come and to see them years back up. Initially, they can be very within themselves, scared to say anything, scared to do anything. Now, they're part of the community, aren't they? I can't wait to come now. And if there's a week where we have to call it off, they're so distressed because they want to come because to them, this is their little outing and it's brilliant. It's in the perfect place, in the media suite, where they can see the pitch. And very often, as Ali will tell you, they say, I remember my first game. I stood over there or I sat down there and it's great. It just brings back lots of memories," added Homer. Members have been treated to tours of the stadium, match day tickets, the popular Christmas parties and the opportunities to meet players, such as at a recent quiz. There is more community action afterwards, as the foundation then hosts the Hawthorns Hub, led by engagement officer Gurdil Singh, which targets loneliness and isolation from 12 till 2 p.m. To register interest and inquire with the foundation about either group, email aj.gill@albionfoundation.co.uk or Gurdil Singh at albionfoundation.co.uk for information. Fly the flag for our Boston Black Country. Council set to debate motion. A councillor has called for a borough-wide campaign to encourage people to fly the Black Country flag. Councillor Pete Lowe has tabled a motion which will be considered before next week's meeting of Dudley Council, calling for the Black Country flag to be celebrated. Councillor Lowe, leader of the recently formed Black Country Party, put forward the motion in response to Reform UK's decision that only the Union Jack and St George's Cross should be flown from public buildings belonging to council it controlled. The party later amended its directive to allow the flying of county flags. Councillor Lowe, who represents Light and Stourbridge North, asked the council to reaffirm its commitment to flying of the flag. and encourage businesses and other organisations to follow suit. We ask this council to note the positive impact that our Black Country flag has had within Dudley, both economically and culturally, he said. Councillor Lowe said it was important for the council to continue its policy of flying the red, white and black flag on Black Country Day, July the 14th, each year. We ask the council to reaffirm its commitment to fly our Black Country flag with pride on July the 14th and any other historic or important date in our calendar, he said. With the exception of days on which the council received directions the Union Jack or other flags should be raised. He also urged the council to continue to encourage businesses and buildings to raise the flag and promote our Boston Black Country. The Black Country flag, which depicts the region's iron, chain making and glass industries, was designed by 11-year-old Gracie Shepherd in a competition in 2012. Gracie, a pupil at Redhill School in Stourbridge, won £200 in a competition organised by the Black Country Living Museum. Her design was used to promote the first Black Country Day on July the 14th, 2013. The colours of red and black were chosen to reflect the American author Eli Blurit's description of the area as Black by Day and Red by Night, owing to the smoke and fires of industry he witnessed in the 19th century. While the image of a glass cone and chains in white represented two of the region's most famous industries. The flag was in the national spotlight in 2017, when the then new MP for Wolverhampton North East believed it had racist connotations. I have serious concerns about the racist connotations of the flag, particularly the fact chains are being used to represent the Black Country, Eleanor Smith said. Liftoff for Air Ambulance's new charity store. This article is by Dan Stacey. Midlands Air Ambulance Charity has opened a new shop in the heart of the Black Country. The charity officially opened the store in Tipton on Thursday morning, saying it represents a fantastic opportunity for the local community to support them. Staff and crew from the charity attended the grand opening and fielded questions about the work of the charity and the important role the shops play in raising vital funds to make life-saving missions possible across the heart of England. The new shop, based in the Tipton Centre shopping complex, will feature a diverse selection of pre-loved items, including clothing, accessories, homeware, toys and more. It also accepts donations of quality second-hand goods to help stock the shop and support its life-saving missions. Regular opening hours for Tipton's Midland Air Ambulance charity shop will be Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Fletcher Smith, Regional Area Manager for Midlands Air Ambulance charity, said, "We are excited to have officially opened our latest shop right in the heart of Tipton. It represents a fantastic opportunity for the local community to support us, whether by donating pre-loved items, volunteering, or simply popping in to browse and shop." Restaurants and takeaways handed scores for hygiene. Ratings awarded to establishments in the latest round of food standards inspections. This article is by Dan Stacey. Dozens of establishments across the West Midlands have received new food hygiene ratings in the latest set of inspections. The ratings are designed to give potential customers an idea of the hygiene standards at food businesses across the region, with a rating of 5 being the best possible result. The list in Samwell includes 5-star rating, Desi Taste at 111 High Street, West Bromwich. 5-star rating, K Africana at 24 K Peel, Smethwick. 5-star rating, Madras Eatery, Berwick Road, Smethwick. 5-star rating, Cafe Carlucci's at care of J Sainsbury's PLC, Hales Owen Street, Rowley Regis. 1-star rating, Basmati Restaurant, 230 Birmingham Road, Great Bar. 5-star rating, Coco's Dessert Factory at 153 High Street, Tipton. Small shops face closure as rates too high. Tens of thousands of small shops and 150,000 jobs could be lost without urgent business rate reform, according to a report released today. The CARB said its research suggests 10% of small high street business owners fear they will need to lay off staff, and 1 in 8 believe they will be at risk of closure. The store is urging for the issues faced by retailers to be addressed urgently by the Chancellor, Rachel Rees, when she delivers her budget to the Commons next month. Shireen Kaurikak, Co-op Group Chief Executive, said politicians were not taking smaller shops into consideration when formulating policy. The boss added, as we approach a critical autumn budget, there's a real danger that the voice of small shops and the communities they serve are not being heard. Local shops aren't just businesses, they're part of the social fabric of Britain. For some, a visit to a local store is one of the few chances they have to chat to someone and feel connected. The report is based on a survey of 300 small business owners. 4 in 5 respondents said business rights reform is essential for survival.
Residents, businesses and voluntary organisations invited to have their say on budget proposals. Every year, Sandwell Council is legally required to set a balanced budget, and the authority is now looking at the money available to spend next year. A consultation is now open to give residents, businesses and voluntary organisations the chance to have their say on proposals and what their priorities are for 2026/27. The survey gives people the chance to tell the council where they think the council should prioritise spending, where savings should be made and what could be done differently. Sandwell Council's deputy leader and cabinet member for Finance and Resources, Councillor Paul Moore, said, "It has been important to us to protect your services and to make sure that we look after residents' money. We had to make some hard decisions last year on things like bin collections. This has enabled us to focus this year on things that will make our borough cleaner and safer. Our proposals will deliver some of the best roads in the country with our approach to removing potholes. We will tackle antisocial behaviour with more CCTV and enforcement. Residents will see even more investment in our parks and green spaces. Our capital programme will see investment in our town centres, more affordable housing and delivering on our master plans to bring new life to our 6 towns. We also want to keep council tax as one of the lowest in the region. The decisions we make when setting our budget will show that we are a caring council that gets things done. Some of the major projects the council is proposing include additional investment in roads, footpaths and road safety, the new Causeway Green Primary School, regeneration of Sandwell's town centres, continuing to support households with the cost of living, improvements to Forge Mill Farm Shop, investment in allotments, a new cemetery for West Bromwich and improvements to other cemeteries and crematoriums, a new archive centre, fitting out Blackheath Library, a new Wensbury Health Centre in King Street, investment in Lightwoods Park and a new Haydon Hill Leisure Centre, 5 new play zones, Bromwich Hall Manor House Conservation Plan, a new eco park in Brandhall. Councillor Moore added, "When the consultation closes, we will consider the responses we receive and bring a further report back to the council's cabinet before setting the council's budget in early 2026. The budget will also take into account the Chancellor's autumn statement in late November and the local government finance settlement later in the year. To take part in the consultation, search for Sandwell Council Budget Consultation online or go to sandwell.gov.uk/budget consultation and fill in the survey by Friday 28 November 2025. Anyone who isn't online can pop into any Sandwell library, ask for help to fill in the survey using a library computer.
TNS Soundings.
The new Wolsey Theatre in Ipswich has an impressive record of inclusivity, providing audio description, BSL and captioning for a number of its productions. The theatre is also inclusive in its readiness to employ disabled actors, and the upcoming production of Don't Look Now includes a totally blind cast member. Alex Bulmer has more than 30 years' experience, including writing and performing in radio drama and film, as well as live theatre. She kindly agreed to talk to us about her career and about her experiences of sight loss, and we recorded this interview in the company of Alex's guide dog, Brody, who you may be able to hear panting quietly in the background. I started by asking Alex which had come first, her desire to be an actor or problems with her sight.
They were almost completely at the same time. I was in second year university in my very first, I think it was my first production where I had an actual part as opposed to just the background. And it was, yes, it was October of that year. I was in Quebec at university and I went back to Toronto for an eye appointment at a hospital in Toronto because I was having difficulty seeing at night, and I was falling downstairs, and I was having trouble getting on and off stage. Anyways, I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. So they really completely coincided. It had always been my intention to pursue acting as a career, but I didn't really start until right at the time that I found out I was going to lose my sight.
So, and it didn't put you off?
For 2 weeks it did. Yeah. I mean, I will say the truth is that the eye doctor who diagnosed me asked me what my future plans were. And when I told her what I wanted to do, she said, nobody wants to see a blind woman tripping across the stage.
Oh, dear.
Yes. One of those classic, horrible things to hear. I knew of no blind actors in Canada. Mm. I didn't really know of any disabled actors. I didn't know how I would do it, but I did think, I guess it's not a very good idea. So for 2 weeks, I transferred out of my major into, I was going to go into psychology full time, which would have been great. But after 2 weeks, my drama teacher, who was fantastic, took me for a walk. And he said, well, yeah, sure, okay, yeah, give up your dreams. Yeah, go ahead. And it was amazing because he just said, no, you just have to, you'll do it. You'll be fine. And in that production, he put a little coal miner's light on my head like they use cross-country skiing at night.
Oh, right, yeah.
And turned my character into a firefly fairy because I was a fairy in Midsummer Night's Dream. And he introduced me to a voice teacher, and I discovered there was this profession of becoming a voice teacher for actors, so you could stay in the field and become an expert in voice. So I did that as well. I went on to train, which is what brought me to the UK. I came to the UK and studied voice at Central School of Speech and Drama, and the rest is kind of history. I never left the profession.
So, and how do individual productions, how do they adjust to having a blind actor on the stage?
You know, it really depends, I suppose, but it depends on, it's done slightly differently in different countries. So in this country, as you know, Tim, there's something called Access to Work.
Yeah.
Access to Work has paid for me to have support people in the room with me in rehearsal.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly helpful in terms of orientation and having lines fed to me and working on the script. By fed, I mean like they're read into a little microphone that, and I wear an earbud in my ear when I'm rehearsing. But you know, in terms of on stage, and it's the same in Canada as it is here. We work it out. Like there's tactile markers on the set that are painted the same color as the flooring, so they can't necessarily be seen. Or if they're seen, they're designed into the design of the set, so it becomes part of the set design, these you know, different kind of tactile floorings. And I use that a lot when I'm on stage on my own. I've been in productions where I've had a person, a support person off stage watching me, and I have an earbud in my ear. And they give me occasional directions in my ear if I'm, you know, if I need to change directions on stage. And in this particular production, Don't Look Now, I have a twin sister who basically is always with me on stage. Right. So it really just depends, you know, on the production.
Do you learn most of your lines from a recording then, or from a speech synthesizer on your laptop, or how does that work?
I use JAWS.
Yeah, yes, I do.
And I find that really useful in terms of learning lines. I've done that especially for auditions. I'll put an earbud in my ear, plug it into my computer, and you know, you get really good at it. You get really good at listening and talking at the same time. It's a skill, but you can develop that fairly quickly.
And what about the current production? And how do you find, because the Wolsey's got some, you know, it's quite small and constricted. We had a backstage tour. And I mean, I wonder if there are any specific issues about getting through around that kind of theatre.
I mean, there probably will be. I haven't spent a lot of time backstage yet. We're in the rehearsal hall at the moment. Most backstages of theatres have hazards, for sure, tripping hazards. Yeah. So the chances, I think in this production, someone from the stage management team is going to be backstage with me. So that there's always somebody there. I rarely try and manage a backstage space. on my own, because there's so much going on. Stuff can move on and off stage.
Well, and you've got to learn lots of new places when you move on from one place to the
next. That's right. You've got enough to worry about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I did a production of Romeo and Juliet in Ontario a couple of years ago at the Stratford Festival. And they put down small ropes in the backstage area from my dressing room to the actual where the stage was. And so that I could use my cane to just trace the bit of rope down the hallways. So that can be helpful.
And what happens to your dog then when you're on stage?
Well, he's three. He's been, let me see, is this the first time he's been, I think this might be his first experience while I'm on stage. Yeah. Cause he's been with me while I've directed something. He's been with me on a film set.
Yeah.
He will be either in my dressing room with somebody so that he's not alone. I don't like to leave my dog alone in an unfamiliar place.
No, yeah.
Like in a familiar place, fine, but not in an unfamiliar place. So he will have somebody with him and probably be in my dressing room is my guess. But he was on a film set with me and he was great. He sat with the, I think it was the costume director.
Mm-hmm.
So I always just make sure that he's looked after.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think if he's had a stage debut yet. No, he has not.
So you do films as well as acting on stage.
Yes,
so how does that work out?
I have to say it's way easier
yeah.
to be on a film set. Partly because, and this happened when I was just shooting the film that I was shooting last May, if for some reason I'm not convinced that I'm facing the right way,
yeah.
I just say, am I facing the right way? Because like the camera isn't rolling the whole time.
Yeah.
It's a much better environment for blind actors. And I've heard this from other blind actors. Some have said that they just won't do theater productions anymore because it's too stressful. And it can be really stressful. I said yes to this specifically because there was a sister written into the play that would be with me the whole time.
Yeah.
And I know the reputation of the new Woolsey.
Yeah.
And I'd heard great things about the director, so I knew I was in good hands, but that's not always the case.
What are your plans for the future?
Yeah. Well, interesting on your question about film. I'm probably going to focus more now after this production, pushing more for film, television, and voiceover work again, because there's like new advancements in technology, which can enable me to listen and speak at the same time. Voiceover work was never an option in the past, often because a lot of voiceover work was also, especially with animation, you used to have to look at the screen and time your delivery to the way the animation was going. So you had to like do it in time with the facial expressions. Yeah. But they're making voiceover work is done so differently these days, and they can slow voices up and speed them up and slow them down. And so the whole voice industry has opened up for blind actors in a way that it never used to. And I'm told that there's more opportunity in this country for blind actors to do audiobooks, which is really not the case at all
That's
in Canada, which is where I'm from.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to do more of that.
So how many, are there lots of blind actors about?
In this country, I would say, well, compared to Canada, in this country, there's loads. I think the UK has more blind actors than any other country that I know of. I mean, probably because I've been in the profession and because I've worked a lot within disability theatre in this country, I'm more aware of the community of blind actors. And I think there's a strong community in this country. Extant theatre has done a lot to develop blind performance and blind theatre. Extant is the UK's leading blind theatre company. They've been around since like 1997 or something like that. Grey Eye Theatre Company, which is a disabled theatre company. But there's definitely more of us. You know, I when I started here when I came over for the first time in 1990, I met two blind actors. And for me, that was like, you know, wow, because there was no one in Canada. And now I I've lost count. Yeah. The nice thing is, like, I'm certainly not the only one in you know, I've got competition. There's like a number of blind actors around my age and women. Hmm. And certainly some great actors who are, you know, span the ages of 20 to 65.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And hopefully more to come, I think.
Yeah.
I think as technology advances, also television, you know, their scripts are being written. People are imagining blind characters in the scripts. Yeah. That's gonna make a big difference. And producers are realizing that they have to coordinate schedules and budgets to make sure that access is taken care of. You know, that's a big part of it is people remembering that accessibility has to be part of the production agenda. So that's getting better as well.
Don't Look Now runs at the New Wolsey Theatre in Ipswich from Thursday the 9th to Saturday the 25th of October. And you can book tickets by calling their box office on 01473 295 900. Don't forget to let the box office know if you are visually impaired and require audio description, and or the support of a sighted friend or companion who can attend free of charge. The following synopsis has been received from the New Wolsey. When grieving couple John and Laura return to Venice, they hope to rekindle happier memories of their honeymoon. But as the nights draw in, so does a sinister figure lurking in the shadows. Some warnings should never be ignored. Eerie visions take hold, and the line between the living and the dead begins to blur. Fate is closing in. Can they escape what's already destined? And the phone number again for booking tickets is 01473 295 900.
TNS Soundings.
Just time to squeeze in a round of thanks to all our readers this week, who were Mia, Jan, Rachel, Linda, Janet and Trevor. And thanks to everybody concerned, including Alison, who stood in for Pam while she's away on holiday. Well-deserved holiday. And let me just add very, very quickly that the podcast for Samwell Talking News is now available. You'll find a podcast player which plays the whole thing without track breaks on our website. But also you can subscribe, that is, catch the podcast on your phone or specialist player by searching simply for Samwell Talking News. That should be the only result that'll come up if you do that search. And you'll get the weekly podcast of the news from us every week in your podcast player. That's it for this week. I have to sign off quickly as we're running out of time to make way for In Touch, which is about access to work and other things this week. But for now, it's bye-bye from me, Ray, and all the team. And get the pen drives back to us as quickly as possible, please. Thanks very much. Bye for now. See you next week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.